This podcast is sponsored by Artsmark Award, the only creative quality standard for schools and education settings accredited by Arts Council England. Artsmark supports schools to develop and celebrate their commitment to arts and cultural education, providing a clear and flexible framework for you to embed creativity across the whole curriculum and address school improvement priorities. The programme also helps build young people's confidence, character and resilience, as well as supporting their health and well-being. Register today at artsmark.org.uk to join this network of over 4,000 schools championing arts, culture and creativity.
Hello and welcome to this TES podcast. Today we're going to be discussing the link between creativity, well-being and mental health. And with me to explore this topic are Julia Wisby. She is a senior leader and director of performance at Admiral Lord Nelson Secondary School in Portsmouth. The school was named Creative School of the Year at the 2009 TES Awards, and it was the first school in the country to receive the Artsmark Platinum Award twice. It was a big deal. We also have Wendy Cobb. She is a senior lecturer in the School of Early Years and Primary Initial Teacher Education at Canterbury Christchurch University. She has a particular focus on behaviour, working with parents and emotional health. She's worked in primary and secondary schools across Kent, London and Essex in a variety of teaching, leadership and advisory roles. Welcome both. I guess the most sensible place to start is the topic of mental health. And we know that there has been a huge increase in the reported mental health issues among young people in recent years. So it'd be good to know how you've both experienced that. Julia, perhaps if we start with you, how have you seen that in your school?
I think at secondary school, the rise in mental health issues with young people has been their overall anxiety about things that when I first started teaching, we didn't see or students didn't express in quite the same way. So the anxiety about exams, the day-to-day just general anxiety of young people, which I think is massively connected to the rise in the use of social media, in how young people compare themselves to each other, in how their lives are very much now an open book. They share everything with each other, and it seems to grow a sense of anxiety that possibly we didn't have as young people because our lives weren't so open and so out there. And it seems to be starting younger and younger and younger. You know, we have students coming in year seven who are school phobic, who are scared of what other people think, who have this sense of anxiety and loss of playfulness that I think children really, really need to have, which is where creativity is so important, that we keep them playing for as long as possible. The pressures on them, I think, start almost the second they start school now, as well as various things at home. And that's becoming harder and harder, I think, as time goes on.
Yeah, absolutely. And Wendy, how about your experience of that?
I'm going to echo some of the things that Julia's saying there. I mean, I think one of the things important to say there is we're talking about an increase of reported mental health issues, and clearly those issues have been there for a long time. But there's a large number of studies that have said that, you know, there's a really significant increase in reported levels of student anxiety and depression, and also students dropping out of courses. And a lot of the reasons that Julia's mentioned there are being built into what happens when they get to university. Certainly on the teacher training education programmes, and we find that a lot more of our time is around, our support is around emotional wellbeing than would have been in the past. Particularly there's that issue with the youngsters that are transitioning for higher education into from school into higher education, and those are multi-layered transition issues that they're dealing with. We also, particularly in the education department, we're very aware of the understanding around adverse childhood experiences and the impact that has on children and on young people's developing brains. And we know that has long-term impacts. And we know that a lot of children going into schools, they go in there with a lot of chronic stress. You know, they're actually coming daily in there. And I think that's sadly true for a lot of our adults as well. It continues as they get older. For me personally, the thing that's upsets me a little bit now is just what Julia's saying, is that they don't want to take risks anymore. They're really scared about taking risks. Mm-hmm. So when we've got assessments, and I teach a lot of students at master's level, and I want them to have really creative responses, but they are so tuned to getting it right and not making a mistake that we very rarely get that kind of creative response that we're really looking for. And I think that's such a shame nowadays.
Yeah, absolutely. That's really interesting. Thank you. And now we're recording this in the middle. Well, hard to say if it's the middle, isn't it? We're recording it in lockdown during the COVID-19 pandemic. Obviously, that's going to be having huge psychological effects on all of us, including young people. So what do we know so far about the impact that is having on young people? Julia, what are your thoughts?
It's really interesting. This week, I've started teaching year 10 again. They're physically back in school in very, very small groups, which is really bizarre teaching drama. Today, I taught a class of two, which is a challenge to be creative with a class of two. And interestingly, the older students I was talking to today were very much like, oh, we've had time to really look at ourselves and take ourselves away from drama that is school day to day. And there was a real contrast between those who've become quite happy with their sense of self and their time by themselves, so actually they're more anxious about coming back to school, and those who almost desperately need the approval of others. So without that, they've really, really indulged in sort of Instagram and Facebook and those things and talking to each other, which causes a whole other network of problems. I think as a parent, I've seen the bigger mental health picture with smaller children and the fact that they can't play and that they've been without their friends. And actually, I was looking at some research yesterday, which said that's where it's having a much bigger impact. You know, I have a little boy who turned 7 over lockdown, who just desperately missed his friends until he went back into key worker school. And their level of anxiety, I think, will come out over time and is very, very different. I think for us as secondary teachers, we were thinking, gosh, we're going to have all these teenagers coming back. And actually, they've been very calm and very collected about it and have actually self-managed, from what I've seen so far, very well. We're phoning our students and we're phoning our tutor groups and we're making contact with them weekly, and they've settled fairly well into a routine. Obviously, there's a number of students who aren't engaging with that learning away from school, and that's a whole different worry. But those that have, and those that have kind of gone into their bubble with their families and actually spent time together, are doing much better than we thought they would do. It is seeing the smaller children and the long-term impact of that and the lack of play, which I think, and we all think, is so incredibly important for young people. It's those fundamental social skills of sharing, being together, talking, growing together, that I think over time we're going to see a much bigger impact that lockdown has had on those particular children.
Absolutely. Wendy, what were your thoughts on that?
Well, interestingly, there was a survey done by Young Minds in the first week in March when they closed most of the schools, and they were really surveying those children that's already had reported mental health needs, and they were looking at the impact on them. Now, you're not so really surprised to say that actually 80% of them were saying actually the pandemic was having a worsening impact on their mental health. And for a third of them, that was really quite severe. That's not really surprising, isn't it? Because we know about the protective factors around routines, social connectedness, and a sense of belonging. And for most of our young people, that's going to be disruptive. But as Julia says, it's a mixed picture here, and there are some positives out of this as well. But interestingly, one of those respondents in the Young Mind survey, they were talking about self-isolating and social distancing was a bad habit that they had really worked hard to get out of. And Julia would probably, you know, resonate there. You really talk about your students that, you know, get together. And now they're being told, I'm being made to actually socially distance and isolate, and being told it's the right thing to do. And that's really confusing. And they're really scared of falling back in that cycle. So we have got children like that who are really going to be struggling now. We've also got the ones that, you know, are not reported and they're just hovering underneath. And they're the ones that the teachers in the classroom are so important for, because they can tune in and listen, and they're not there to tune in and listen. So they're the ones that might dip. But other protective factors are also linked to the characteristics of creative individuals. So things like a sense of positivity and having an ability to affect change. And that's why I think, from what Julia's saying as well, a lot of young people have taken solace in being actively involved in things like the Black Lives Matter debates, about volunteering, about effecting change. I mean, you know, we've got examples like Marcus Rashford, haven't we, in the Free Schools Voucher Scheme. So there are things like that that are really important. And also in that survey, a very small number of those who reported mental health, children with mental health issues, felt that actually their mental health had improved. And the reason they cited, now again, that resonates with what Julia's just said, because they talked about having had a difficult relationship with school for many reasons, which might be about the pressure of accountability, or it might be because they're bullied or something else. Relief at not having to be there all the time. Feeling positive about being, you know, the response, the general response in the country. Friends proactively contacting, reminding that they're valued. But also finding, and I think this is really important, finding that their own anxiety has a clear focus. Now we're all anxious. And we're all feeling it. And people that don't normally talk about anxiety are saying, I'm feeling really worried. I don't know how to cope with this. And actually, that's quite comforting if you've got a mental health issue, feeling that you're not alone. This is normal. This is okay to have those emotions. And I think that's quite a significant thing. So I think there are ups and downs, and we're all probably feeling that ourselves as well.
Yeah, that's really interesting what you say about the discussion around anxiety. I've heard that from adults as well, anxious adults. You were saying, in a weird way, having this one very specific thing to focus that is anxiety making is a bit of a comfort, because your brain's normally, you know, all over the place, where it's like, well, this is what I'm worrying about now.
Makes sense, doesn't it? There's a really good reason why we should feel anxious now.
Wendy, you've written before about the need for system change around mental health in schools. And what have you found in your work around that?
Okay, so I facilitate a network of professionals within education who promote emotional health as foundational for all teaching and learning. And for quite a long time now, we've struggled actually with the terms that we use, and particularly the term mental health, because so often that's associated with negative connotations. And of course, it shouldn't be. I mean, mental health is a good thing, isn't it? But it normally is used to apply to people with mental health issues. So we've seen a lot of what's been in education policy, such as training designated leads for mental health, deploying mental health support teams, as being responsive rather than proactive in nature. And those initiatives are really, really important, but we don't think they quite go far enough. We think we need to be a bit braver than that and look at the causes of the rise of mental health issues within the education system itself. For instance, to what extent are exam stress, teacher burnout, academic definitions of success contributing to the problem? And again, that's going back to what Julia was saying before. And I think we also need to radically rethink what we prioritise in incentivising schools in place of the current culture and associated pressures of outcomes accountability. But there are some really positive policy shifts. So we've got the new relationships in health education, and we've been looking at that across the year. And also we've got the revised school inspection framework, which is positive, but I do have a problem when you begin to link wellbeing with accountability. That's almost an oxymoron in itself. And it begins to link then to a bit of a tick boxing exercise, where schools can also be overwhelmed then with the response to that, because there's so many now wellbeing toolkits, you know, wellbeing framework measurement things. And I've even seen things such as school stress policies. And I think the minute I see a school with a stress policy, I think I don't want to work at that school because that's really stressing me out already. So I think we are actually in a really brilliant time now to really radically rethink what we prioritise in schools and really support and incentivise leaders to make emotional and good mental health the core of their purpose. Otherwise, it's always going to come second nature to academic outcomes.
Julia, what do you think on that?
Absolutely. I'm kind of really hoping that we embrace the changes that lockdown and all of this has brought, where teachers are not accountable for their year 11 grades and that they're not going to be judged on them because the exams went, and we were trusted to make our own judgments on how those students would do. I've been trusted with my year 10s because we deliver BTEC within performance. And actually, there's a level of, you're a professional and you can do this and you can make judgments and you know your young people. And actually, do we actually need to test the life out of children at every single key stage for them to be successful? And I hope that we take that continues and we take those really positive steps and go, well, do you know what? It's far more important that we've got happy, well-rounded young people who are leaving with what they deserve as opposed to what they're being tested towards all of the time. We take something positive from it. I think that would be a huge thing. We focus, we talk about, it was absolutely what you were saying, Wendy, when we talk about mental health. So when we have Mental Health Week and we have those raising awareness moments within school, we talk all the time about your mental health is there all of the time, in the same way your physical health is there all of the time. But we only ever seem to talk about it when it's a problem, if you like. And actually, we should be taking care of our mental health every day in the same way that we exercise. And our school is very focused on that. Your mental health is your responsibility a lot of the time. And these are the things that you need to do to keep yourself well. You exercise your body, you exercise your mind, and you stay well. And I think where we've been on lockdown and where we've had time and where our young people have had time to really focus on themselves physically and mentally, we need to now grab onto those things that we've done and that children have done and build on that, as opposed to revert back to, oh my gosh, we've missed all these tests and all these exams, how do we make all that time up? You know, our lessons today, this week in school, have just been on focus and reconnecting with our young people, rather than, I can't imagine anything worse than getting your students back into school and going, we've got all this work to catch up on that you've missed over these 3 months. That's not how we need to be working now. We need to be going, how have you been? What you've been doing? How can we move forward? What have you learnt about yourself? How do we celebrate those successes that you've had in that time? And see it as a really positive, embracing, moving forward moment, as opposed to the negatives of, oh my gosh, look how far all these children have fallen behind, because that's what the government are constantly telling us. How are we going to catch all this up? And now it's teachers' responsibilities to look at how they're going to catch up on all this lost learning. No, it's not. It's our responsibility to look at how we build upon what we've learned during this time, not how we catch up on what we've missed.
Absolutely. And it does feel like creative approaches will be a really important part of that, you know, that kind of antithesis of box ticking and testing. So just to touch briefly on the benefits of like arts and culture in relation to mental health and wellbeing. Wendy, what do we know about why it's so beneficial to be sort of tapping into those creative sides of ourselves?
Okay, so I think, first of all, we need to distinguish between arts and culture as therapy and creativity in all its forms as a protective factor for wellbeing. So I think that's really important. I mean, certainly we know there's lots of evidence around how arts and culture can have a really positive impact on people that are exhibiting mental health issues. So for instance, if you've got intense anxiety, we know that that aspect of flow, when you get immersed into a creative activity, can really take away that anxiety for you. There's a lot of evidence around that. And we also know the benefits of community projects like joining in, participating in choirs. We talk about the connectedness again, and drama productions, and also cultural activities in terms of a sense of identity and belonging. Although I think it's really important we think about what we're exposing in terms of culture and making sure that that's multicultural too. We've seen a lot of things where students may be in creative partnerships where they've been involved in arts projects and they've exhibited positive impacts on their self-confidence and their self-esteem, and that's linked to a sense of autonomy and capability. But again, I worry about that arts and culture initiatives in schools will be seen as responsive interventions to mental health rather than being one part of the real lived experience of a setting which really prioritises, as Julie was saying, human flourishing and doesn't see success based on solely academic achievement. So there are great links around those benefits. And there are also links around the link between creativity itself and the characteristics of a creative person and the properties of a healthy personality. We can see the correlation there as well. So certainly there's lots of benefits for there, but I think also not just the benefits for the children. I'm sure Julia's going to agree with me there. I was myself, I was a music lead at primary school, a languages lead and a subject coordinator for Gifted and Talented. And I was given a title by my head teacher. She was a really supportive head teacher. She gave me creativity coordinator. And I can tell you, my days were stimulated by coming into school with the excitement of doing creative things. And if your teachers, your staff are getting the benefits of that kind of creative opportunities, that's really going to make a difference for your children as well. So don't just think about the children, just think about the staff as well.
Yeah, Julia?
Absolutely. And I think it's important that you have a definition within a school of what you mean by creativity. And that's where you are looking at the difference between arts and culture and creativity. You know, they are, it's very easy to go, well, that's your art lessons and that's your music lessons. And one of the reasons that we were Creative School of the Year last year, which we still hang on to because it hasn't happened this year, is that creativity is about looking at problems in a different way. It isn't just about creating something artistic. It is about creative thinking, and that's how we approach it as a school. How can you, if you can create a culture where every young person and every adult is always looking at how you can solve something, you look at something that you're given and go, right, how do I think my way around this, and how can I find different solutions to things, which is exactly what we're having to do at the moment. That's true creativity, and that applies to maths, English, science, drama. It applies absolutely everywhere, and that's been our focus as a school, especially at the moment, in having really creative thinkers constantly. And that's ultimately what you want your young people to do, to take a problem and find a way to solve it themselves with your support. It isn't just, like I said, the artistic bit. The artistic bit, and obviously, you know, that's what I lead in school as well as creativity, where we look at the arts and culture, especially now, you know, fundamentally, art is created through a shared experience. And we all come from very different perspectives of what's happening now, but we've all shared an experience within it. And at the moment, I'm trying to create some performance work with my students around that and developing characters and what can we get that's a positive, because this brings us all together. You know, the arts have been massive during lockdown, and I hope it doesn't get forgotten. You know, all the shows that have been available for young people to watch and for us to watch. I've watched more theatre in lockdown than I do day to day, but I haven't sat in a theatre for ages, and that's driving me mad. There is so much out there in terms of what we can see, what we can do. And it isn't just, as Wendy was saying, it isn't, you know, we don't come at creativity and arts purely from a well-being point of view, although that bond and that being united and that shared cause and that shared creation thing is incredibly important. It has a value of its own that's really, really important. And I think there's been a wealth of it during lockdown that we need to continue and keep developing and keep, you know, my school leaders have never had to think as creatively as they are at the moment. We've got two big wedding marquees out on our school field, which is where our year 10 are, because every bit of research says you're 19 times less likely to catch something if you're outside than inside. So like, how can we register students outside? How can we keep them outside the building as often as possible? And all of that is creative thinking. That's all creativity for how to do things. How do we engage the students that haven't engaged in lessons? What can we do? So that's developing video lessons and live lessons and looking at that engagement of students. And it's a real challenge for educational leaders at the moment. And then you get what's really frustrating, I think, is you have schools working incredibly hard and teachers and leaders working incredibly hard to find that way. And then the BBC will put something out about, oh my gosh, 30% of young people aren't engaging in any learning whatsoever. And it's really, really damaging to education, I think, what the press and the media have done. You know, we've had reports of lazy teaching and all these kind of things. I think it's really important that people take a forum to say, actually, I honestly don't think teachers have ever worked so hard under such difficult circumstances in the most creative way that they possibly can do with no notice whatsoever. And I think every member of the teaching profession has been truly creative at this time to do that. And it's important to celebrate that and to acknowledge that and to say, we're not sunbathing in our gardens, we're not decorating, we're not doing that. We're trying to find ways to continually engage young people in every single way possible.
And I do think in the wider public, the profession is hugely valued. You know, just on a personal level, my sisters are at home with their children, so grateful for teachers. You know, they'll never take for granted again, like having teachers. I really like that we touched on that point about the creativity that's happened in lockdown. And there has been so much, even, you know, like the rainbows that are on every window, seemingly. And, you know, there was Grace and Perry's art club, which was amazing. And just even things like, you know, baking the bread and doing the TikTok. It really does feel like this has been, yeah, almost like a sort of coping method for a lot of people, mental health wise. Wendy, I don't know if there's anything from the research side about sort of how that lockdown creativity has helped.
Well, I mean, certainly most of us have had some kind of creative projects going on, haven't we? Been landscaping gardens or baking cakes, no flower cakes because we don't really flower at the moment, and that's a creative opportunity, isn't it? Or even tackling that connection with grandparents. I mean, that's something we've been quite creative about, haven't we? I think that goes back to that sense of agency or having some kind of belief in our ability to affect change, and I think that's why we're all sort of doing that. But I think also there's an issue here we've got to be aware of, that when, for some of us, when we see other people's creativity, that can also have a negative touch on us, because I bet we've all had times where we just couldn't do anything. You just blank out. And we've got to be appreciative of that as well. So, you know, I've had all that time, but what have I done with it? And you might have heard some of your colleagues sort of talking that, you know, what have I actually been doing with that? But I think it's going back to what Julia said, actually, about rethinking creativity as not simply being about making and doing. It's not about the outcome. It's really about the creative mindsets. And that's exactly what Julia was saying. We're not just thinking about those projects that we're doing. It's also about adopting new worldviews. And that's certainly what's been happening a lot. And I think that's where, you know, young people and parents are beginning to work collaboratively to effect change around building a better future. And we have seen that. I've seen some wonderful things of parents and children doing things on YouTube together. And we've seen all these wonderful family things that have been going on together. And I think that's where I see the real creativity, where people are coming together and think differently about their worldview and what they can do to make a change.
Great. And so, for schools that are still in this sort of lockdown, or some of the kids are back and some of them aren't, in terms of the kind of creative, like encouraging that creative mindset in the short term for this bit of this year that we've got left, Julia, what advice would you give to any schools who are sort of wanting to encourage that more?
Well, there are a number of schools that are really focused just on their maths, English and science, or their EVAC and their core, and I'm hearing all the time, sadly, about home learning stopping for art and music and drama and it not being set anymore because they're focusing on other things, which I find desperately sad, and so do my young people. I spoke to them today and they're like, gosh, if we didn't have this to do, what would we do? And there are year 10s going back into school who are only doing their core subjects, and I think it's really, really important for schools to see the creative subjects and to see those things as a challenge that can be tackled, that it is really, really important. If you want your children to be successful in those things, you need those creative ways of thinking as well. And that is, every child doesn't need to have an instrument at home to be able to do music. They can sing, they can listen to a piece of music they've never heard before, they can listen to a style of music, they can watch numerous dance shows that are out there and write you a little review of it, but they've watched something that otherwise they would never ever have seen before. They can watch theatre, they can create, we've had them creating video time capsules. What will they put in a time capsule? We've done, me and a colleague have been ridiculously silly and we've been making videos and getting students to do the same thing and submit them. So they've had to make 2-minute versions of their favourite films. They've had to dress up and read stories to a sibling using all the voices from a book. And they're really simple little things, but they're enormous for the young people doing them. They absolutely love to do something creative that isn't sitting at a table in their dining room constantly submitting work that's the same thing. And that's where our school has been particularly good in trying to create work that is imaginative, that engages our young people, and that is a little bit different. But I do know, as you were saying, there is a vast difference in what schools are asking. But I would say, don't dismiss it. Don't let your young people think that it's not as important as everything else, because my worry is the message that gives out in the longer term for when those children are back in school is, oh, your maths, English and your science are the important ones. We didn't worry about you doing those other things because these are more important. That sticks with young people. You know, I've got a seven-year-old, and the stuff that he's been sent home to do, which I have to say we have struggled with a lot, has been really creative. You know, he's been building obstacle courses. He's been making videos. We had a project to do on animals, so we built a zoo, and he's learned how to film on a phone. It's trying to be as creative as possible with those things, because he has to see that, and everybody has to see that as just as valid and just as important when they get back into school, because otherwise I'm really concerned for those art subjects when we start to return to whatever or move into whatever the new normal is going to be, if we now go, well, then they're not as important as everything else, because they really, really, really are.
Absolutely. Wendy, what are your thoughts on that one?
Well, I think, you know, I'm adding a lot of what Julia's saying there. And I think it's about celebrating creativity in all its forms, because, you know, not all of our families have got those digital technologies to be able to do all the things that we're asking them to do.
Yeah.
And creativity can be lying down under a tree and looking up and seeing that leaf and then just drawing that, finding whatever you've got. I mean, people have talked about the fact that children might not have painting stuff or whatever they need to create in their house. But you can go into the kitchen, you can find all sorts of things to help you to be creative. But really celebrating that. And I think that's going to be so important to schools, isn't it, when they go back, to celebrate every aspect of creativity in whatever form it is, because we have got unequal experiences at home. And we need to be very acutely aware of that, celebrating everything that children are achieving in whatever circumstance that they're in at the moment. But that's kind of my view on that bit.
Thank you.
I taught a student today in my year 10 group who hasn't submitted any work at all over lockdown. So we had a chat in our lovely class of two, is there a reason? And she went, yes, that's because there's 11 of us in our house and there's one computer and five of my siblings are younger than me from 1.5 to 9 and I'm looking after them. So I haven't done any work anywhere because I can't get on the computer and I can't do that, but I have read stories to them every day, I have played with them every day, I've stopped them running out the front door every day, all of these things. And I'm like, that's fine. And it's important to acknowledge that some of them are being carers, some of them are being young carers where they haven't had to be before, some of them are looking after vulnerable parents and vulnerable grandparents, and it's about celebrating, you're absolutely right, Wendy, all of those things as well. Our young people have had really different experiences during this, and actually that's a huge success for her, that she's made it back into school, very relieved to be back into school and have a break. But also she's had to grow up so much and do so much caring and keep younger children entertained. Well, that's being creative 24/7. You know, I can tell you that trying to do these and teach remotely and stop a six-year-old climbing the walls. You know, people have been amazing and done some incredible things. And you're absolutely right, Wendy. It's about celebrating every single aspect of that, not saying, look at all the brilliant work you've handed in. Because it's so much more than that.
And I'm also hoping that we'll value different things in terms of careers as well, because what's been wonderful is when we've been celebrating refuse collectors and, you know, there was a lovely story of a young girl that had moved from, she was working in a pool, I think, a swimming pool, and then she'd moved with the council onto the refuse collection, and she was having such, you know, fun with her colleagues on there. And we're valuing these kind of things and the skills and the conversations that you're developing with the public and all these are brilliant things. We shouldn't be pushing those to the one side and saying, well done, whatever you've achieved and what's, you know, really made you feel good. is something we should applaud when children come back in. So I hope we will rethink careers advice going forward.
Oh, definitely.
And that leads us on quite nicely to the final thing I wanted to touch on, which was any advice you could offer for schools that do want to integrate that more creative approach going forward and sort of capitalise on what's happened in lockdown. Well, and that's, this could be to leaders or to individual teachers. What would you advise? Wendy, do you want to go first?
Okay, well, first of all, I'm saying be brave, just go ahead and do it. But I would also say very much let your students and teachers and parents take the lead in that. I think that's really, really important. I'd also would caution any head teachers, because we're such a research evidenced profession now, aren't we? And we worry about waiting until we've got the research around there. I mean, don't wait for the research around this. There is evidence around the link between creativity and academic achievement, but it's a bit mixed. And it's, you know, it's limited because we don't focus on things like that. We focus on, you know, maths and English and things around that. Don't go with that. Go with your gut instincts. Go with what's, you know is right for your soul. But what Julia was talking then about those creative characteristics about, you know, positivity, about questioning, curiosity, encouraging open-ended investigations, learner-centred inquiry, all those, and opportunities to stop and reflect as well, really, really important. But really just go for it, you know, be brave. And there are a lot of really brave head teachers, just like Julia's school out there, actually doing these things anyway.
Yeah, I'd say capitalise on the resilience of your young people, which is, you know, what basic creativity teaches us, doesn't it? If it doesn't work the first time, how does it work the next time? How does it work the next time? Our young people, I think, are maybe more resilient than we've been through some of this, and bouncing back and moving forward because they've not experienced anything different. And build on that. How can you now capitalise on how creative your young people in your school have been, how creative your teachers have been? And like I was saying before, it's looking for all those opportunities and not being afraid to go with it. Now we've almost had some shackles broken in that we're not going to be performance tabled next year. We're not going to have those things about results. So embrace that. This is now the time to go, what can I do differently? Suddenly I'm not being judged against everybody else. That's an amazing thing, I think, as a school and as a leader, to go, well, now I'm just focused on getting each one of my individual students the best that I can possibly get them. I'm not being measured against anybody else. I've actually gone back to being really focused about those individual kids, as opposed to, well, I've got to get this because that's my appraisal or that's my school performance tables. And heads need to fully embrace that and go, now there has never, ever, ever been a better time to try doing something different. And I really hope schools run with that.
Thank you. Thank you both. That's really inspirational. Lovely. I think I'm going to go and lay under a tree.